This is the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers. Here's your host, Jessica Cootie, and Husker Radio Network analyst, Jeremiah Searles.
And welcome back into the Sideline Slice with the big dog, Jeremiah Searles. I'm Jessica Cootie, and another victory episode, 5-1. Searles, second straight year under coach role.
Never a doubt. Never, right? No one ever thought that that game was ever in question. No, I mean, that was his win. We knew that was going to win from kickoff, right? But yeah, I mean, fantastic game. I mean, we're playing some really fun football, infuriating football at times, but very fun football to be a fan and to see. And it's been entertaining, to say the least.
Okay. So you sent a text. I wasn't going to bring it up, but you just did. You said this team is so fun and so infuriating. What makes them, let's start with the fun part. Why are they so fun for you?
The fun is they fight.
Yeah.
Like they fight and they fight and they don't quit. And there hasn't really been a game this year where I felt like this team's out of it.
Yeah.
But like they've turned it in. They're done. They're showing their underbellies. Like it's over. And that is fun. When you have a team that you can believe in for 60 minutes and they'll find a way to keep it in there and go, that's a really fun thing. Plus, our offense is fun to watch. You've got playmakers and Hunter and Key and Barney and Emmett and making explosive plays, which we've lacked for so many years, getting sacks, getting to the quarterback. There's just a lot of excitement when you watch this football team from what the players are doing on the field.
What was your reaction? What were you doing during that 50-yard run from Emmett Johnson?
I was screaming score. Like I was yelling at the TV, score, right? I mean, just finish the job. And to see that type of shiftiness and that ability and the way that he was moving around, it's just continuing my point that I made on Big Red Reaction in week one when I did this thing, that he's going to get better and better as the weeks progress. He's showing that his vision's getting better. He's starting to turn into that back that gains confidence towards the end of the game and is going to just continue to roll and roll and roll as the game goes on. Really excited to have him. And that was such a fun run to watch.
I think the infuriating part that you talk about is the same thing that the players get frustrated by. And you know, we talked to Isaiah Hunter for the Cornhusker conversation. He just talked about it, you know, being able to execute in the red zone and put up seven. And so some of those things I think is probably what the players also want to be better for, is the same thing that you are telling us you get infuriated by.
Yeah, it's the lack of execution and the self-inflicting errors. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that really just irk me as a former player and as a high-level player of this game. The penalties, the turnovers, the couple of botched coverages, which is the first time we saw kind of some free runners on the back end this weekend. No. Those are the type of things that this team hasn't been doing. They've been taking care of the football. They haven't been a heavily penalized team. And we've been really sticky on the back end. But those three things this game kind of showed up. And so as you're watching those things, you're going, no, nip that in the butt. Like that can't continue. That can't be a trend. That can't be something we end up talking about as, oh, we lost the penalty battle or, oh, we lost the turnover battle. Because, yes, it's great to turn over the ball three times and still win the football game. But as we play quality more and more quality opponents, and I'm not taking anything away from Maryland, but, you know, we've got some good football teams coming up on the schedule. We shouldn't have to dig ourselves out of that hole. We were the better football team on Saturday. Hands down, no questions about it. All three phases, we were the better football team. It shouldn't have been an adventure. It shouldn't have been super fun to watch. It should have been Nebraska's in control of this game. No doubt we're losing this football game. We're scoring points. We're getting them to make the go to the distance. We're flipping the field on special teams. It just, when we self-inflict errors, we can turn things into adventure. And I don't care if you're a really good football team, a really bad football team, or an average football team. If you allow a team to hang around into the fourth quarter, you're just allowing for anything to happen. I mean, one bad bounce, one bad incompletion, one bad fumble, whatever it might be, you're allowing teams to stick around, and we need to learn how to put teams away.
How impressive was it to see Dylan respond the way that he did? He throws three interceptions, and then for him to, you know, take the offense on the couple of drives at the end of the game. I think that there's been a lot of things in Dylan's game that's grown. To me, that's been one of the more impressive for me, to see how he handled. He responded. He bounced back, and I chatted with Heiner Carberg after the game. He's like, I've thrown three interceptions in a game and it sucks and it's really hard to work through. And so I feel like that showed a lot out of Dylan, that the fact that he was able to respond and still take this team on a couple of game-winning drives.
For sure. And I've had to talk more people off the ledge this week than I really would have liked to about Dylan Raiola. And the thing I keep coming back to is, boys, he's a true sophomore.
Like, yeah.
I think because he is so mature and because he has done so many really fun things and cool things in his early Husker career, we treat him like he's a fifth-year senior. You shouldn't be making those mistakes. It's like, no, he shouldn't be. But do I expect some bumps from a young player? Yeah. Was Trevor Lawrence perfect? No. You know, these dudes grow and they adapt. And so as long as the pendulum is swinging more towards the growth and seeing him do the game-winning drives and seeing him make good decisions with the football, there's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be and there's going to be turbulence with young players. And that's at every position. It's just more focal when it's the quarterback position. And so, yes, am I like, does it piss me off that he threw three picks? Yeah. Am I sky is falling, put in TJ Latif? Absolutely not. The kid's a true sophomore out there growing up in front of our eyes, turning into a absolute monster quarterback that's going to lead this team for hopefully another 2.5 more years. You know, so be happy that we have a guy like that and that when we get ourselves in a position where we need a game-winning drive, he's got that in it. You know, and there's faith in that. And it's not a, man, we need a hope and a prayer. It's okay, Dylan, go do your thing. And that's the trajectory that I see going with Dylan Raiola. And it's not, I expected some bumps in the road. I really did as we headed into Big Ten play.
Was that the best game from the offensive line?
I mean, against a quality, against a not directional school, yeah. You know, I think, you know, if you talk about the quality of opponents that we've played from Cincinnati to Michigan State, now to Maryland, that was probably the best all-around performance that we had. Shout out Turner Corcoran coming in at left tackle on the game-winning drive and holding it down, right? That's why you keep a guy like Turner around. They go in there, and I don't know if it's because Elijah got hurt or whatever it might be, but I just saw 69 in there on that game-winning drive. And so, you know, having those senior leadership guys go put in there, I think Gunner's settling into the right tackle spot. Justin Evans is just a pit bull, and just watching him run around and try and kill people, I love it. I think he adds an attitude and an edge to this offensive line from the center position that is infectious. So I think overall, you know, there's still some things to clean up, some of the sacks, some of the holes closing too quickly, but overall they're getting better as a unit.
You've talked about this every week, and so we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on it, but I think you really saw two, just the interior three with mm-hmm. Dylan's monster day, just how good and comfortable they are. And they got better, it seemed like, and more physical and dominant as the game went along.
Yeah, and that's the confidence you feel as an offensive line, is when you can commit to the run game and truly just go, hey, 1 and 2 yards in the first quarter is okay. It's not what we want. We want 3 and 4 every time. But those body blows, those jabs, right? 1 and 2 yards, 1 and 2 yards, 1 and 2 yards. When you get to the fourth quarter as an offensive lineman and you've been leaning on these dudes for 4 quarters, that's when those 1 or 2 yards start turning into 6 and 8.
Which
and
we saw.
6 and 8. Right. It you impose and you test the depth of your opponent. Hey, can you stand here? Because everyone wants to rush the passer. Every defense is built to rush the passer, right? It's cool. It's sexy. It's fun. We get to do our fun little sack dance, all that nonsense. No one's defense is built to just stop the run for 60 minutes. Right, that's just not how college football is, not how the NFL is, but it's not how football in general is played anymore. And so the teams that can commit to the run for 4 quarters have so much success when you get to the fourth quarter, because those dudes are gassed. Because I don't know if you've ever tried to stop 300 pounds going north-south over and over and over again. It's not easy, and it's hard to do. And you might have a lot of juice and excitement early in the game, but after you've been getting pounded on for 4 quarters, it gets harder and harder to do. And all it takes is you to have that one lapse in judgment as a D lineman of, man, I'm tired of this. I'm going to take this gap, and boom, there's the explosive run. And so that's what I saw from this Nebraska offense, is we were able to just continue to commit to the run game and push and push and push and push. And then it paid huge dividends for us there in the fourth quarter.
Is there anything you hate more than sack dances?
DBs doing incomplete when they had nothing to do with the receiver dropping the ball. I think that might take the cake for my most like hated thing, is the receiver just drops it and then they do the like incomplete and the seatbelt thing or whatever it is. I can't. That's way worse.
Okay, who gets your game balls from this one?
I'm going to give it to Dylan. I've been waiting to give it to Dylan. You know, I've been waiting, and he's had plenty of opportunities, and I know he threw 3 interceptions, and I know it wasn't his best day. But when we needed him most, and he needed to show up the most for this team, he led us on a fantastic game-winning drive to go put the nail in the coffin. I mean, that throw that he had to Luke Lindenmeyer to get the thing started, then the throw to Harburg on the sideline to get that down there, and then the one-handed thing to Key. I mean, he just play after play after play, he answered the bell. And that's what I've been waiting to see from him. Like, you know, I know you could have given it to him when he ran for the like that game-winning drive alone, regardless of the three interceptions, shows me his mental fortitude to overcome. It shows me his physical ability to lead. And then it shows me just the exact talent that he has to play the quarterback position. So by far and away, have to give it to Dylan Raiola this week.
Valentino's, a slice of home you just can't get anywhere else. What started with a treasured family recipe has become a Nebraska tradition for over 68 years. Proud to be the official pizza of the Huskers.
Okay, let's talk Minnesota. This is, you love Minneapolis, or you love playing there.
I do. I love Minneapolis. I think it's great. A stadium, super cool. And they're a team right now that's feeling pretty good about themselves.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been asked a little bit about these back-to-back road games, and I've told people, and I think it's fair to say, I feel like, that this game made me more nervous going to Minnesota just with the short turnaround, the Friday night, and it just seems like Minnesota always plays really well against Nebraska, mm-hmm. and it's always seems to be a close game, so it just is a battle, and no matter what, you can look at whatever the spread is and what Minnesota has done, they just always seem to show up and play well against Nebraska.
Yeah. And the reason Minnesota is such an infuriating team to play is they change the whole rhythm of what you're used to playing, mm-hmm. right? If you go back and watch Minnesota's game versus Buffalo early in the year, Buffalo goes down and scores. And I think they go up by like 3 or 4 and there's like 9.5 minutes left in the game. And they drive the entire 75 yards in 9 minutes and 27 seconds and then score with like 3 seconds left on the clock. And that's just what Minnesota does. They shorten the game. They trust that offensive line. They rely heavily on the run game. You talk about a team that commits to the run, right? They rely heavily, and they've got two really good edge rushers that are NFL players. And so their whole thing is get a lead, protect that lead, keep the ball out of the offensive's hands, and then just eat up clock. I mean, this is a game that you might only get 7 possessions, right? If you're lucky, you might get 7 possessions on offense. So that's why it's so important that when we take the football and we get the football on offense, we have to make sure we stay on the field, give our defense a chance to rest, and then we need to dictate the tempo of this team and make this team play from behind, because that's where Minnesota struggles, is when they have to then go up-tempo, they have to play catch-up. They're not built for that at all.
This also seems to be a game that a lot of times comes down to special teams, which feel really good about the way Nebraska special teams has been playing.
Yes. I mean, even after, so we give up the touchdown, right? And things aren't looking great. Big kickoff return. Yeah. And I looked at my buddy and I go, there's Eckler bailing us out, baby. Like, there's Eckler putting all his things together. I love Coach Eckler. I mean, I say it every single week, but he just continues to gain more and more praise every single week, because the special teams can completely flip the momentum of a game in one play, right? Maryland goes down and scores. Yeah, Maryland goes down and scores, and oh my gosh, here we go, and right down. Okay, sweet. Now we're right back in this thing. Now we have the momentum. It's just, it's such a nice feeling not having to be worried about special teams. And so, yeah, this is a game that all three phases are going to have to click, and special teams on the road play a huge piece of that, taking the crowd out of it, big returns, right, pinning them deep. All that stuff is going to be really important. And Archie Wilson needs a bounce back game as well.
It's pretty amazing to me to, you know, we talk a lot about Dana Holgorsen being able to identify areas to attack opponents. Mike Eckler has now done that with special teams, and he watches so much film and he identifies, okay, where can we attack certain teams? And he has different personnel groupings for whatever it is that they might need to do. And so back-to-back weeks, the punt, block and touchdown, they said that was going to happen. They practiced that. They knew it was going to happen, and they knew that they were going to probably be able to run one back on kickoff. And so I know you've been a huge fan of his since the hiring happened, but it's pretty remarkable for me to see that he's able to do a lot of what we talk about with defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators. He's done as a special teams coordinator.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know that there's a lot of talk about people getting raises this week in Nebraska, but he deserves one. Like, that dude has been an MVP and been fantastic for everything here, because so many times special teams is kind of the, you know, the second child. Like, oh, look, offense, defense, we love you so much. Oh, who wants to handle special teams? Special teams is Coach Eckler's only child, and he's a special spoiled child, right? He gives him everything he wants. He feeds him whenever he needs to. He plays with him. He does everything. And that's what makes him so great, is he's solely focused on special teams and schemes, and what's going to work this week may not have worked last week, but we're going to install it. And I trust you guys, and putting that in trust. Hey, we're going to change it this week, but I trust you guys to go and do it. And everyone's going, yeah, you do trust me, Eck. We're going to go do it. Right? It's just, it's this infectious, contagious thing that I've watched him do in person. And it's so fun to now get to see him do it all over again in Husker Red.
Okay, so when you talked about the Minnesota and trying to slow it down, what is
it's so boring. their offense is so boring.
So being that, you know, for this Husker defense, and I know that they feel like they've been improving up front, but what do you do as a defense to be able to stop them from doing what they want to do?
Yeah, this is going to be the Nebraska's biggest test of stopping the run, because Minnesota is going to commit to the run for four quarters, regardless if it works in quarter number one or quarter number two. They're going to run the football. And so Nebraska is going to have to be mentally strong and mentally tough, going, hey, we're probably going to give up some runs here. Right? It's just the law of averages. If they're running the ball as much as they are, we're going to give up a 6 yard, an 8 yard, a 12 yard, a 15 yard at one point. It's about staying mentally in it and going, hey, all it takes is one or two negative plays to now put them in an obvious passing situation where we feel like we have the advantage. And that's what Nebraska has to do. We have to win on first down. We have to win on second down and put them in the third and longs and not the third and threes that they want to live in so bad. They just want to live in third and three, because now they can run it. They can pass it. You put the defense in a pickle of, hey, do we put big personnel on to stop the run, or do we put pass personnel on to rush the passer? You want to make it very clear, cut and dry. Hey, it's third and eight. They're throwing the football. Or, hey, it's third and 11, right? We've had two negative plays in a row. They're running the football. And so being very good on first and second down. And then the bigger piece of this is going to be the back end. Don't get caught with your eyes in the backfield. Because when a team runs the football like this, from the safety position specifically, you really have to make sure you're good on your run fits and you have the ability to run up into the box and make a one-on-one tackle so that that 6 yard run doesn't turn into a 12 yard or a long explosive run. But that can't mean that you get caught with your eyes in the backfield and you get burned deep. Because that's where Minnesota also does well, is the play action pass game, where it's run, 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 run for two quarters. And then here's the big play, deep shot. And there's the big crossing over and the safety got caught flat footed. And now there's a free runner. So it's twofold. It's making sure your guys up front win on your blocks, don't get double teamed, create havoc, movement, all the stuff that we're going to do. And then the safeties making sure that they're good in run stepping. Like, the safeties are going to be the pivotal point of our defense. Sean Singleton and that crew, they're going to be the pivotal ones that make this defense go or not, because of their run ability to stop the run and also not to get beat over the top on play action pass.
And for the offense, they're going to do what they do, right? And it doesn't matter what the defense is, but what are you seeing for them to be able to continue to execute and score those touchdowns? Again, they threw the interceptions, but it seems like they were kind of moving in the right direction. But how do they continue to improve in the area of executing once they get in the red zone?
Well, I'm going to be really curious, not just from a red zone perspective, but what Minnesota does to take away. Because every defensive coordinator wants to make a team one-dimensional, whether it's stopping the run or whether it's stopping the quick game pass or whatever it might be. It's the defensive coordinators always go into a football game with, hey, we're going to take X away from Nebraska. And so I'll be very curious early in the game, is that X Emmett Johnson, or is that X the quick passing game with playing really tight man zone coverage, right? Dropping, hey, we're going to drop eight and only rush three and make things hard. No, I'm just going to be really curious. Nebraska is going to have to be able to adapt in this game, because we've now shown the ability to throw the ball deep, throw the ball intermediate, and run the football. Minnesota is not going to let us just have our pick of which three do we want to do right now. They're really going to take something away, and then we're going to have to adapt in real time. And Dana Holgorsen and Dylan Raiola and crew are going to have to say, hey, they're loading the box. We got to push it deep to get this thing open again, to get back to the run game. Or, hey, they're dropping eight. We got to run the football and make them commit before we can get back to the passing game. So I truly believe this is going to be a tale of two games of what Minnesota does early and how Nebraska responds offensively.
All right. Yeah, three biggest keys for a Husker victory.
Takeaways. We can't turn the football over again. We have three turnovers. I think we're
playing
getting,
with
I
fire,
plus
right?
Two. Yeah, playing with fire, right? You're in play with fire long enough, you're going to get burned. So I want to make sure, take care of the football and get some turnovers. Right. Well, let's get a couple interceptions. Let's get a couple fumbles. Let's get something to give our offense a short field here. So turnovers is my first key. The second one is don't fall into their tempo. Like, regardless of if they're just driving for 6 and 7 minutes, and all of a sudden you look up the clock and there's 2 minutes left in the first quarter and you don't even touch the field yet, or whatever it might be, don't let that mentally wear you out, right? Play within yourself and going, understanding, hey, when I get advantage on offense or defense, I have to take advantage of when I'm on the field, especially on the offensive side, and not understanding how important, it's not pressure, but how important it is to be able to go and continue to sustain drives, right? Three and outs cannot be a thing in this game. They just can't. Minnesota lives on three and outs. And so we as offensively have to continue to sustain drives and then defensively find ways to get off the field. And then lastly, no excuses on the short week, no excuses on the night game, no excuses on the road game. Everything has to be business as normal this week, even though it's the short week. Don't allow any of that kind of noise or any of that stuff, any of the Matt Rhule noise, no distractions. Right? None. I don't care if Matt Rhule is going to go be the next to Penn State and you're hearing it from everyone else. Like, who cares? We are focused on winning this football game in Minnesota right now. There's a lot of noise going around outside the building, short week, all that stuff. Block out the noise. Focus on controlling what you can control.
Were you ever a part of that outside kind of conversations Mm-mm. that your coach might be leaving?
Not with my coach. I mean, my last year in 2013, there were some rumblings of Coach Bo getting fired if we lost to Iowa, and then we ended up beating Iowa. And a lot of us went to the podium and were like, we'll go to the gates of hell with this guy. So you guys can figure out what you want to do. And he ended up staying one more year. But other than that, I got really lucky. I didn't have to deal with any of that, but it was a different era back then. I mean, the transfer portal didn't really exist. There was huge penalties if you wanted to leave. So yeah, different era, but yeah, it's a lot of noise. It's a lot of noise going on right now. And I mean, it's hard to block out, I'm sure, if you're a player, but I'm sure Matt Rhule's had conversations with this team that we'll never be privy to. And hopefully he's able to settle the ship, right the ship, and just let the boys focus on what they need to focus on, which is beating row the boat.
I'm not worried at all about that. Obviously, we didn't even really talk about it in this podcast. So there's no doubt in my mind he's had the conversations that need to be had within that locker room.
Not even a little bit of doubt? Not what? Even a tiny little bit? No. I've got a tiny little bit in the back of my head that makes me stay up at night. But other than that, I don't think he's...
I don't see it as it's going to be a distraction.
I don't want him to leave. Trust me. I don't want it to be a distraction either.
I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be. I think that...
Because here's quick sidebar on this piece. The only reason I say it might be a distraction is from the agent world that I live in, right? When there's blood in the water of a coach that might move on or might get fired or might go somewhere else, the sharks will circle. Right. People will start reaching out to team. Hey, if Coach Rhule leaves, would you leave? I represent so-and-so. And that piece, got to keep that out. Right. Got to keep that out. And it's the shady guys that do it. It's the shady agents that are just looking to make a buck of, hey, if Coach Rhule leaves, I bet you I could get you XYZ or whatever else. Can't let those dudes in. Can't start thinking that way. Got to keep focused on the task at hand, which is beat row the boat, go to 6-1, be bowl eligible. And then let's go get everything else that's waiting out in front of us.
I have no worries about that they're going to handle it how it needs to be handled. How about that, though? You know, this time a year ago, we were just like, hey, let's get to six. I was talking to Kyle about that. I know he wasn't here last year, but it just feels different in the fact. It's not just even about getting to six this year with this team.
No, and that's what happens when, like, again, you start checking things off the box, right? Get the monkey off the back. Yeah, we went to a bowl game. Great. That should be the standard every year. That should no longer be the, like, get to six. It's now, okay, we're going to get to six at one point in time. Now it's about getting to 8, 9, 10, right? That's where we're heading as a program. That's what Matt Rhule has instilled in these boys, and that's what I love so much about where we're headed.
All right, last thing. You said Deshaun Singleton is going to be a big – what about offense? Who could potentially have a big day for the Huskers on offense?
I think Luke Lindenmeyer is going to have to be a big piece of this offense, because if Minnesota decides to want to stack the box to stop the run, Luke Lindenmeyer on a linebacker is going to be a big mismatch. And then vice versa, if they want to go light and drop a lot of people deep and keep us everything in front of them, he's going to be a great outlet underneath for Dylan Raiola. And whether it's the swing routes or the stop routes, the hitch routes, whatever it might be, those 10 to 15 yard intermediate routes that he's really good at, when then yards after the catch, he's going to be a big piece on what makes this offense go on Friday night, in my opinion.
So I know you're off a Big Red Reaction. You're not back this week, but you'll be back for Northwestern.
Correct. I will be back for Northwestern. I'm headed to Seattle this weekend to go. I have three clients on Seattle Seahawks, so I'll be there for Monday Night Football.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll look forward to chatting with you next week, and then back on the airwaves with Matt Cotney and Big Red Reaction here a week from Saturday.
Can't wait.
All right, for Jeremiah Searles, I'm Jessica Cootie. This has been The Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers.
Go Big Red.
Valentino's treasured Italian family recipes have been passed down for generations and still locally owned and operated. Valentino's proudly serving Nebraskans in Memorial Stadium for over 30 years.